No matter how challenging life gets, the beach is still my favorite place to clear my head, where a casual stroll along the pier can somehow make everything feel okay again. And like the best things in life, a scenic walk is always free. With the warm California sun in my face and the cool ocean breeze in my hair, I started thinking about other parts of the world that are experiencing a different climate altogether, whether it be in the southern hemisphere, where it is now autumn, or in the polar regions, where it's cold and snowy, as I stand here watching people surf. I then started reflecting on the ancient stories of Northern Europe, in particular, mythological tales perceived as ancient conflicts between the early Finns and the Sami, who are historically known as Lapps or Laplanders, terms which they themselves considered derogatory, and are a population that today encompasses large northern parts of Norway, Sweden, Finland, and parts of Russia. The Kalevala is a 19th century work of epic poetry compiled from Finnish oral folklore and mythology, somewhat similar to the Iliad, telling a heroic saga about ancient European history and the controversies and retaliatory voyages between the peoples of Northern Europe and beyond, sometimes referred to in mythology as Ultima Thule, but in this story is known as the land of Kalevala and Pohjola, which comes from a word meaning base or bottom in Finnish, but usually in the context of a cold place in the far north or Arctic region. The Kalevala was instrumental in the development of the Finnish national identity, especially leading up to the independence from Russia in 1917. The work is also well known internationally and is thought to have partly influenced Tolkien's Middle Earth mythology. The Kalevala begins with the traditional Finnish creation myth, leading into stories of the creation of the earth, plants, creatures, and the sky, accomplished by the characters singing of their exploits or desires, often with the use of magical spell casting, and stories of lust, romance, kidnapping, and seduction. The protagonists of the stories often have to accomplish feats that are unreasonable or impossible, which they often fail to achieve, leading to tragedy and humiliation. The Sampo is a pivotal element of the whole work, which in the Finnish saga is described as a magical talisman or device that brings its possessor great fortune and prosperity, in this case constructed by a legendary blacksmith, and in many ways can be compared to the Horn of Plenty in Greek mythology. The Sami have a complex relationship with the Norse people, who are traditionally the dominant peoples of Scandinavia, who speak Indo-European or Aryan languages, and who founded the kingdoms of Norway and Sweden, in which most Sami people live. While the Sami have lived in Finland and the surrounding area for around 3,500 years, Sami settlements of Scandinavia does not predate Norse settlements of Scandinavia, as is sometimes popularly assumed. Genetic evidence shows a migration since the Pleistocene from west to east across Europe as the ice receded, likely from the Iberia region, which is where we find the Basque people. The Sami also share a certain degree of mtDNA, meaning their maternal lineage, with the Basque, while showing paternal genetic contributions from migrations into Europe from the east, possibly from Siberia or from some nomadic tribes from the north. The waves of migration of Germanic-speaking or Aryan peoples to southern Scandinavia happened independently and separate from the later Sami migrations into the northern regions. The earliest known people believed to have brought Indo-European languages and Indo-European culture to Scandinavia were probably the battle axe culture, an offshoot of the Proto-Aryan Yamnaya culture of the Pontic-Caspian steppe, who absorbed the prior agricultural and hunter-gatherer cultures of the region, fused with them, and this gave rise to the Nordic Bronze Age, which is considered the ancestral civilization of the Germanic peoples. A genetic study published in Nature in June 2015 examined the remains of a battle axe male buried in Vibby, Sweden, 5,000 years ago. He was found to be a carrier of the paternal haplogroup R1A1A1, the haplogroup attributed to the ancient Aryans that disseminated agricultural civilization, advanced metals, horses, chariots, and Indo-European languages and religions to the rest of the ancient world. The Sami language is not Indo-European, and Tolkien, the English author of The Hobbit and The Lord of the Rings, had a great love of languages. During his life, he studied Gothic, Old English, Old Norse, and for Tolkien, the languages were closely connected with the tales of the people who spoke them. The Finnish language is unique to the region, and the Kalevala poems seem to have enchanted Tolkien in 1911 when he first read their translations at King Edward's School, saying that the Kalevala felt un-European and yet could only come from Europe. Quote, "The colors, the deeds, the marvels, the figures of the heroes are all splashed onto a clean bare canvas by a sudden hand. Even the legends concerning the origin of the most ancient things in the world seem to come fresh from the singer's hot imagination of the moment." Tolkien used this beautiful quotation to describe how fresh and sudden Kalevala felt in comparison to other mythologies. Kalevala enchanted Tolkien, so in order to properly feel its flavor, he attempted to learn Finnish, which was new territory for him as it differed from other Germanic groups he was familiar with. To Tolkien, it sounded beautiful and was what he based his language of the High Elves on in his Middle Earth stories. The practice of bear worship was once very common in Finland, and there's strong echoes of this in the Kalevala. This becomes very interesting when one considers the names of European cities, such as the Swiss capital city of Bern, or Berlin, Germany, whose mascot is a bear that appears on its coat of arms, and incidentally is also traditionally the symbol of Russia, not to mention on the California state flag, as it was revered by Native American tribes, some of whom are said to have migrated down from the northern Arctic region. It is interesting to note that the original, bearded, and genetically distinct inhabitants of Japan, the Ainu people, also revered the bear in their mythology and legends, stating that when the gods decided to visit Earth, they disguised themselves in the fur of the bear. While modern academia does not seem to notice these ancient genetic and cultural connections between geographically distant demographics of people, the German Anangerbe scientists of the 20th century did, finding forgotten links between the Germanic people of Europe and Tibet, certain castes of India, Iran, the Mediterranean, and even ancient China and Japan, all of whom, like the Vikings, Phoenicians, and Native Americans, also revered the swastika symbol since ancient times. Many of the deep cave systems inhabited by Cro-Magnon, considered the direct ancestors of the Basque, during the Ice Age that the archaeologists of the 20th century enthusiastically explored, are now permanently sealed off and forbidden to enter. It is no longer permitted to conduct an archaeological dig without proper permits that are impossible to obtain, except for certain approved families, such as the Leakeys, who seem more interested in promoting a political agenda than a scientific one. And theories pertaining to subterranean habitations, or lost civilizations once inhabiting the polar regions are no longer considered, with most of the area near the South Pole completely off limits ever since the failed Allied invasion of Antarctica in 1946 and 47, known as Operation High Jump, when Admiral Byrd and 4,500 armed troops allegedly tried to locate and destroy a German base built below the ice, which was rumored to be located at an entrance to massive underground caverns, which may or may not have been once inhabited. Speaking of ice, I decided to stop by at a place called the Cow's End to try one of their ice-cold smoothies. Mine was called the Tropical with mango, and it was pretty good. But I still had my mind on Antarctica and what may lie beneath it. So I made my way over to the California Science Center, which is next to several other museums in downtown LA. And while it's mostly for young children, it's still an interesting place to visit, especially to see remnants of the early space program. But also to learn about extreme habitats, whether it be polar or subterranean environments. Something most people don't know is that around 70% of the Earth's oxygen has nothing to do with trees or surface plants, but comes from algae in the water. And while some algae require sunlight and photosynthesis to produce oxygen, there's another type of algae that gives off oxygen as a byproduct of chemosynthesis, meaning it uses the heat and chemical reactions near underwater volcanic vents, producing a sustainable food chain that does not require any sunlight at all. Some algae, fungus, mushrooms, and lichen also glows in underground cave systems. Since there's no wind to propagate the spores, glowing is an adaptation that attracts insects and animals that help to distribute the spores, taking the place of wind in subterranean environments. In other words, there absolutely is heat, food, oxygen, and dim diffused light below the surface of the Earth, making the legends of underground kingdoms such as Shambhala, Agartha, Asgard, and Tolkien's Middle Earth not only plausible, but maybe even probable, the more one looks into the various mythologies concerning inhabited subterranean caverns from around the world. Of course, what made the German explorations of harsh environments possible, especially below the Antarctic ice, was the advanced scientific innovations of their U-boats, or submarines, which could go deeper and stay submerged longer than any other known vessels on the Earth at the time. That said, no less than 50 German U-boats remain unaccounted for after the end of World War II, not including still classified models, which, according to direct sources, were larger and used exclusively for transporting equipment and cargo and could reach depths surpassing what is disclosed in modern history books. Without the documented and undocumented scientific advancements made by the Germans before and during World War II, there would be no Sputnik, there would be no NASA, and there would be no need for the 70 years of propaganda put out by Hollywood concerning the UFO phenomena, which is anything but unidentified, according to whistleblowers that have worked in military bases, such as Area 51, that claim that military intelligence is well aware of anti-gravitic craft built here on Earth, which during World War II were called by the media Foo Fighters, and after World War II were labeled as flying saucers. Of course, there will be those that insist that mankind is now reaching its high point, that it is at the pinnacle of scientific achievement, and all acquired knowledge is held by academia and made known to the public, with nothing of any significance forgotten, withheld, or covered up. But not everybody thinks that way.
We think that we are getting better each day. And we have come from a more primitive society, but we are getting better every day and becoming more superior in knowledge and technology, when actually, in point of fact, we are digressing. We are moving away from what we were thousands and thousands of years ago. And I am of the opinion that our history has been vastly changed, and so that we don't really know the history of mankind on this earth. We're trying to catch up today to what they knew tens of thousands of years ago. We are finding everything that we think we know. It's already been here tens of thousands of years ago. There was a higher life forms on this earth than we are. I think that they look like us maybe, or in some ways like us. They were far superior. And so it all implies that there was a far higher civilization all around the world. These ancient, brilliant builders and teachers, they didn't grow into that. They came in fully developed. If you go to the very beginnings of Egypt, it was already, it came in as an extraordinarily brilliant society of builders and knowledge, and then eventually devolved into what Egypt is today. But there was a time when Egypt was in its prime, when it was founded. So it didn't kind of work up to, as we say, we're working up to some kind of a wonderful future. But Egypt didn't do that. It came in at its pinnacle. How is that possible? The only way it's possible is because when whoever this was that we call the ancient Egyptians, they came here knowing all that we still are trying to find out. There's a higher occult or hidden. The word occult simply means hidden. And so there's obviously a higher science or an occult science behind mankind's ability to contemplate the spiritual aspects of life on the earth. Lots of ancient people already knew what we're trying to find out today.
They have taken the information that is in essentially every school on the planet, and they've modified the information. All history documentation in this country and on every country on the planet have been given lies about astronomy, lies about mathematics, lies about technical capabilities, lies about the universe. You name it, okay? Everything have been lies. Every PhD on this planet, whether they're scientific, whether they're medical, makes no difference. Every book that they read the 6 years they were in the university are lies. They're not telling the truth. They were not taught the truth.
I wanted to pay a short tribute to Jordan Maxwell, who passed away last month, and to William or Bill Tompkins, who also passed away a couple of years ago. And while I didn't always agree with either of them, I admired their integrity in speaking their truth at a time when doing so publicly draws a lot of pushback from mainstream academia and the media. The idea that there's advanced technology from the 20th century that has been withheld from the public for decades is not a popular one, and the concept of occult knowledge from prehistoric times that the powers that be prefer to keep secret is also ridiculed, as it goes against the narrative of a linear, unperturbed progression through the ages, downplaying the possibility of periodic global cataclysms, alternative sources of abundant, pollution-free energy, technological advances in health and longevity, and a deeper esoteric spiritual understanding of man that would result in a liberated global population rather than a subdued, manipulated, and controlled one. And while I don't claim to have all the answers, I freely share what I do know to those with an appetite for truth, as I now have developed an appetite for some garlic butter shrimp scampi. I hope you enjoyed this episode. Bon appetit. My name is Robert Sepper. I'm an anthropologist. My published work is available on Amazon and through all other major book outlets. If you'd like to support my work, you can do that through patreon.com. There should be a link in the description. Please subscribe for future updates. Leave your thoughts below. Have a wonderful weekend, and I hope to see you again soon.